Is it appropriate? No. Is it confident and funny? Absolutely.
Is it fate or just a date? Bet it's a movie, Chelsea or hate. Mads is here to make her watch it. Either way, grab your popcorn, stay in for the evening. You know what it's time for, Love at First Screening.
Hello and welcome to Love at First Screening, the show where I, rom-com enthusiast Madison, introduce my friend, co-host, and resident genre skeptic, Chelsea.
That's me.
To all the feel-good.
Cliche.
Romantic.
Questionable.
Hilarious.
Occasionally humorous.
Films she's never wanted to watch. Oh my god, Chelsea, it's been so long. It's been decades.
It has.
How's the wife? How's the kids? How's the dogs? The white picket fence? All of those.
Yeah, definitely all things that I have.
Well, that and your corporate job at the Ford factory. Chelsea, I think that we've started a new tradition. And that tradition is I inevitably pick one of the worst movies to be the very first movie of the season. Not to give any spoilers on my thoughts or yours yet, but I feel like this is now a time-honored tradition.
Here's the thing, Madison. I think that, in my personal opinion, the episodes in which we don't like the movie are just better than when we are like, oh my god, it's the best. Look at all of the things that this movie does. I can't believe it. I just really want you to know that this movie's great. And people are like, yeah, we get it. You like it. People like to hear you, you know, bitch about a bad movie.
This week, hopefully, you watched Your Place or Mine, which came out in 2023. It's a Netflix original with Ashton Kutcher and Reese Witherspoon. I think that you thoroughly did not enjoy this movie, hopefully either for the same or different reasons than I did not enjoy this movie. Because I did not enjoy this movie. I just wanted you to suffer along with me.
Wait, so had you seen this before we watched it for the purposes of the podcast?
Yeah, I had watched it once before, like really shortly after it came out, because I'm like, oh, new rom-com, Reese Witherspoon, I'll check it out. I like Ashton Kutcher, and I didn't like it, so I made you watch it so we could talk about it.
I think the things that I enjoyed about this movie had nothing to do with the movie itself.
Yes, absolutely.
I think anything that brought me joy while watching it had nothing to do with the plot.
No, what brought me joy was Tig Notaro.
Yes, love Tig Notaro. Really just the assortment of cameos in this film from a variety of, and at least like a quarter of the cast of Crazy Ex-Girlfriend was in this movie for some inexplicable reason.
One of my notes that I took while watching this movie literally just says, Rachel Bloom?
Yeah.
But okay, there's a reason why so much of the cast, so many of the cameos feature Crazy Ex-Girlfriend cast. And that's because the writer and director of this movie, Aline Brosh, I think that's how you say her name, Aline Brosh McKenna, actually did some writing and producing on Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, along with The Devil Wears Prada. So I don't really see how a producer and writer of Crazy Ex-Girlfriend and The Devil Wears Prada ends up making this movie, but that would explain the cameos.
One mystery solved.
I am very much looking forward to reading you the featured review on IMDb when you look up this movie, just to get all of the information about it. But to give you a very, very quick run through, we have Reese Witherspoon as Debbie and Ashton Kutcher as Peter. They are longtime best friends. They hooked up once and then Peter dipped. They became best friends. They've been best friends for years. They live on opposite coasts. Debbie lives in LA. Peter lives in New York. Neither of them ended up going off and achieving their dreams of being a big time writer on Peter's behalf or an editor on Debbie's behalf. Debbie has a kid really young and Peter goes off and does consultant things. And I want it noted that consultant is not a real job. I would love to be one because I genuinely don't think it's a real job. anyone who wants to write in and tell me that's wrong, I'm not. Okay, now that we've got that settled. So Debbie is going to take a class to finish out this accounting degree that she's getting so she can apply for a more stable job because her son has all of these medical needs. And not like he's going to die medical needs, just like he's allergic to life medical needs and has like eczema and stuff. She's going to go stay at Peter's apartment in Manhattan because the class is in New York. And her babysitter, Rachel Bloom, drops out last minute, and Peter decides that he's going to fly out and stay with Debbie's son. His name is Jack. He has a really awkward haircut, and take care of Jack while Debbie is in New York finishing up her degree, which I don't know if it was ever confirmed that she like passed her final or anything. It doesn't matter. Okay, that's just whatever. Reese Witherspoon's character ends up meeting Jesse Williams' character. His name is Theo Martin. He's a big time editor. And she finds out, snooping through Peter's stuff and talking to his ex Minka, who just shows up and ingratiates herself into Debbie's life briefly. Debbie finds that Peter has written this whole manuscript, and she reads it cover to cover, and she thinks it's absolutely beautiful. And she claims after meeting Theo that she's a freelance editor, and she gives him Peter's manuscript to read. He decides he wants to publish it, etc., etc. On the other end, Ashton Kutcher's character is like, yeah, I'm in love with Reese Witherspoon's character, but I can't do anything about it. We'll not deal with it. We'll suppress all of our feelings, just like men should do. And ultimately, they both realize that all they want is each other after Reese Witherspoon has a brief fling with the editor guy, Theo. She comes to her senses and is like, I'm actually in love with Peter. And Peter's like, I'll admit to Debbie that I love her. And they have this whole like fight in an airport, which I used to think that the airport meeting of like Big Proclamation was romantic. But if you've spent any amount of time in an airport, that's just not true. If anyone tries to talk to me at all, even if I'm traveling with them in an airport, it's done. We're done. It's over. But all in all, happily ever after, they get married. He gets published. She becomes an editor. I mean, it's fine. The kid gets to play hockey. Tig Notaro's there. Does that sum up everything?
Yeah, pretty much. Okay.
The drink that you want to drink with this movie, if you'd like to drink one, is anything that is alcohol and stupidly garnished. Like a ridiculous garnish. So you could do like a really over-the-top Bloody Mary, Pina Colada, whatever you want, just as long as it's alcoholic and looks like it's a small garden.
Yeah.
So there you go. That's your place or mine.
This is one of the first films that we've watched where I went, I know exactly what the drink will be, because Reese Witherspoon is just eating vegetables soaked in alcohol. Like that's what her drink is.
Yeah.
Every time they go to that fancy place.
You could do a really elaborate sangria. I think that would be a good option because then you'd be able to really incorporate all the booze-soaked accoutrement. Yeah, no, so that's your drink. So I have mine here. It's actually just a blueberry shandy, but it has like some blueberry pulp in it. There you go. Where do you want to start on this movie? I have a lot of feelings about it, but I want to hear your feelings.
Here's the thing. You are fired up about this movie. And while I did not, to be clear, I did not enjoy this movie, I have no intention of ever watching it again. But I'm just kind of like, yeah.
I know.
It's a rom-com. I don't know. Controversially, maybe, between the two of us, I didn't despise this movie because I was mad at it for reasons that I think are on the line of being mad at it because it's doing something that didn't make sense for the genre, and also being mad at it because it did things that the genre does do and I just don't like personally as a viewer.
Yeah.
So I guess to elaborate on that sentiment, I had similar feelings about the romance that I did about the romance in Music and Lyrics, in that I didn't want it to be a romance.
Yeah.
I think that they had this really beautiful friendship. And while I'm not in any way saying that you can't go from being friends to lovers with someone. That's not what I'm saying. But I think that we just don't have any movies that are about friendships like these, especially when, you know, the people around them are commenting on the fact that, like, you know, this is a man and a woman who have been in a 20-year long friendship. And they're not, you know, they don't, oh, it's kind of weird that you're friends and you talk every day on the phone, suggesting that that means you're automatically in love. Maybe there is some truth to that. I would assume that if you did love someone that you probably want to talk to them a lot.
Yeah.
But I also think that there are friends that just talk every day. That's, you know. And also that friendship is not a monolith.
Yeah.
There are different kinds of friends. There are friends that you just catch up with over dinner. There are friends that you don't talk to for 5 months, but then you talk on the phone for 3 hours. And then there are friends that you see casually at your job or, I don't know, some sort of community place that you go to and you see this person and, like, you'll sit and talk with them. There's friends that, you know, you have scheduled interactions with, and there's friends that, like these two, you might talk every day. And I think it does a real disservice to people, to the many forms that friendship takes, to only ever let this kind of relationship be romantic when it is between people of different genders. I think we do see this kind of relationship when you're talking about, specifically, I would say, femme-presenting people who are expected to be very talkative and yada, yada, yada. That was frustrating. So it was the same way that I was frustrated with music and lyrics, because I just thought the romance was unnecessary. Mm-hmm. In this way, I just didn't understand why there needed to be a romance, especially because, and this leads me into my second point, they do not interact in person the entire film until the airport scene.
Yeah.
And while I understand that in the context of the film, they have in some respects unknowingly been like pining after each other for 20 plus years, which I don't totally buy, but okay, if I am going to, you know, lean into this and say that that's true, it doesn't seem like they hang out a whole bunch. I just find it difficult. This rom-com is basically two different stories connected by this kid that needs to be taken care of in the circumstance that she needs to go to this class in New York City. So they're going to trade houses for the week, right?
Yeah.
But I don't enjoy it. And it was kind of confusing. And like the only reason I knew that they were going to get together at the end is because it's a rom-com.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she is out here living her life. I feel like a better plot would have been for each of them to learn something about themselves when removed from their everyday environment. So for her, it's letting go of the kind of, I think as he puts it, saran wrap mothering style that she has.
Mm-hmm.
And which I think she does. She's doing things, it starts out, she's doing things for her friend. She finds this novel, she wants to get it published. She happens to meet the publisher of her favorite publishing house, and is something that can only happen in a movie. But
you mean you're not a publishing house groupie?
I mean, look, do I have publishers that I think are awesome? Yes. Or like, not that I think the publisher is awesome, but they publish a lot of the books that I find to be my favorites, I guess is what I would say. And so I specifically, you know, when I notice that, you know, imprint on the book, I'm like, oh, I should have known it was going to be great, you know, like, which is confirmation bias. But anyway, so my point is, so she does this thing, but then she ends up fulfilling her lifelong dream, which for understandable reasons she thought she couldn't have. She got married, she got pregnant, and now she has this kid, which, you know, requires probably not as much attention, especially now that he's 13, even with all of his allergies. Like, he's old enough to understand what he's allergic to.
I'd like to actually jump in here really quick, and I'd like to insert a note that I wrote down while watching this that says, why do I feel like I could handle a dog or cat with that many allergies better than that fucking kid? That's all. Please continue.
But I think that that might also be part of parenting in general. Like, when you have a kid that's really young, they need a lot more of your attention than, you know, as they get older and they're able to do more things for themselves. I think some parents have a hard time letting go.
Yeah.
All of that was there. And yet the story wasn't just about her learning to let go and learning that maybe now is the time that she could pursue the dream that she had, you know, all those years ago, right? Mm-hmm. It wasn't that. Instead, it was like, she's just going to do this nice thing for her friend. And I think she does get a publishing job at the end of the movie, but it's also like she has to proclaim her love. And also, at no point did I get the sense that she loved him until the, like, outburst stuff at the end, mm-hmm. where she was like, oh my God, I do love him. I'm like, how can you be that? Look, this is coming from someone that is quite oblivious in this arena. I don't know how she could be that oblivious.
Yeah.
Like, for him, I could at least understand that he, you know, he said, like, he did get scared. He did run away. But by the time he wanted to say something, she was married and was going to have a baby. And he was like, I have to walk away because this is selfish. And I mm-hmm. love and care about her. Right. And I'm not trying to, like, pat him on the back. Like, that's just what he should have, you know, done.
Right.
Do I think he could have been there for her, especially because it sounds like the marriage didn't last all that long? And, mm-hmm. you know, I think if he loved her, you know, he could, you know, come back into the picture earlier. But so, like, I did understand that he was in love with her, but her being in love with him was kind of this, like, wild card.
Yeah, it was – they treated it like an epiphany on her part, but it just wasn't – it wasn't really believable. It was just convenient to the plot. If I can, I'd like to read you the review that is the featured review on IMDb for this movie.
Okay.
The title is Awful Film. Storyline is awful, and it's so slow and boring. I fell asleep on the first attempt to watch. On the second watch, I couldn't finish the film. Actors did their best with what they had, but I really can't recommend watching this. It attempted to make you guess the storyline with some very weak relationship builds, but all it did was let me down. It has a cheap, low-budget feel to it, and I really do think Netflix was relying on the big-budget actors to make this film. It's a shame, because with the lineup, it should have been a really good film, evening film for couples, but I wouldn't watch this again if you paid me.
Wow.
Yeah. And I think it hit best for me. Okay. Walking into this, with the way it's described, immediately you get sort of a maybe When Harry Met Sally meets The Holiday sort of vibe mixed with its own thing of the house swap and the being best friends, friends to lovers kind of vibe. It had so much potential. And ultimately, every inch of the storyline was either unexplored or rushed if they did attempt to explore it. And the setup, the beginning was fine. The beginning held promise. I think it honestly, for me, started to fall apart when she's in New York. She immediately meets the editor, and then they hook up, and she reads this, and she hooks up with him after she reads Peter's book and passes it along to him. And I don't know. I honestly wish that she had ended up with the editor, and that maybe my goal, is it too soon to introduce a new potential plot? I don't want to rush us.
I just say go for it.
Okay. This is how I would have loved for this to be set up, because I agree that Ashton Kutcher and Reese Witherspoon, one, I just don't think they had a lot of chemistry anyway. I don't know if it's because the actors don't really have a lot of chemistry with one another. I didn't find them to be very believable. And what I wish had happened is that she ends up with the editor and moves to New York for her dream. And the kid ends up getting to play hockey or whatever still. He can keep his hockey. Ashton Kutcher instead realizes that maybe the woman that he was with at the very beginning, we could flesh out their storyline a bit more and have her be like, I really feel like this is going somewhere, but we've just hit a wall. Like, you're not very open. I want to pursue this relationship with you, but to do that, I have to get to know you better or something like that. And they both realize, like, he goes and stays with the kid and realizes that he wants the settled down family life. And then she goes and realizes that she can achieve her dreams career-wise. And it's very Holiday in that they swap, but I don't want them to end up together. I just don't buy it. And I think that, like you said, they could have had so much self-growth parallel to one another and boosted by one another. And instead, we just have this ham-fisted attempt with him to be like, I'm mad she hooked up with sexy editor guy. I'm going to go hook up with somebody. I can't hook up with somebody else. I love her. Oh, no, what to do? And then they just duke it out and decide to be together in an airport while he's going back to LA and she's arriving, or leaving LA and she's arriving. I don't know. Everything felt so loosely connected and I didn't buy any of it. And I wanted to because it had promise and then it didn't.
There was a lot of setup for both of them to have self-growth. I think on his part, emotionally distant from obviously his romantic partners. He's only ever dating people for 6 months and then he's moving on, or they move on because they realize it's not ever going to go anywhere. And yeah, all right, fine. In the context of the film as we have it, that's because he's in love with Reese Witherspoon. But in terms of, you know, he goes to California and he wants to be this like cool uncle guy, basically.
So weird.
But realizes that like he's responsible for like a human person.
Yeah.
He, I think, has a better understanding of his friend's life. And mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe she is smothering. She's probably doing too much, but he can be doing more. And he also, he's trying to solve, like, I think where it's trying to be humorous is that he's approaching a 13-year-old's problems as a 13-year-old with a lot of money.
Yeah.
But it just doesn't work. Mm-hmm. Because he's trying to fix these external things instead of focusing on trying to help the kid be happier by what he eventually does, which is help him get on the hockey team, which is what he actually wants, is to be able to participate in things he's passionate about instead of chasing two specific friends, right?
Yeah.
So I think, yeah, like both of us have pointed out at this point, there was a lot of room for growth. And I feel like the movie would have been more successful if that had been the focus rather than that being the focus until we make a hard right turn and all of a sudden we're like, now we're going to focus on romance. And also, not that this has anything to do with the movie specifically, and I haven't seen all of Jesse Williams's filmography, but the only thing I could think was, man, this is twice that the guy gets left for the person that is probably not as great. He was in the second Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants movie. He was in Art School, RISD, with Alexis Bledel's character.
Mm-hmm.
I remember they're like cooking at his apartment. She's like, you cook with so many colors. And he's like, only another artist would notice, which is a dumb line. But
it is.
It's stuck in my noggin. Anyway, but in for anyone that hasn't seen it or hasn't seen it in a while, in the first film, Alexis Bledel goes to Greece and falls in love with a guy that is the great-grandson of her grandfather's enemy. And so it's like a big thing. But then eventually, you know, like they jump into a lake and kiss and it's fine. Or it's probably the ocean because it's Greece. Anyway, in the second movie, they start out and he is getting married to this other woman because she's pregnant. And so you're like, what the hell happened? And like time has elapsed between these two movies. But then she's off at like a summer program at her art school, you know, living her life. And she meets Jesse Williams and he's like incredible. I mean, Jesse Williams is a very attractive man. I think we can all agree, regardless of your personal preferences, that he's a very good looking man. And right. And he's like, has a lot of the same interests as her. And so in a lot of ways, I'm like, he's playing almost the same character. He is the guy that on paper looks perfect for the woman that he's been paired up with. Mm-hmm. And he finds her attractive and he thinks she's charming and he is really interested in her. But for whatever reason, is not interested. In both of these instances, I don't understand it. And I'm not saying, here's the thing, in Sister of the Traveling Pants, I'm not saying she should have been with that guy because you barely knew anything about that guy other than like surface level stuff. But I was like, I don't really know why she wants to get back with the guy that like apparently broke her heart. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Whereas at least in this movie, I can be like, while I don't agree with her decision, you know, like I don't know. I just think he was the better choice. So like you, I just think that they should have had her develop a romance with this guy and maybe have him develop a romance with someone in LA.
Exactly. I looked up.
And then they're like friends supporting each other through romance.
Yes. And okay. And they could basically like call each other on their bullshit and have a beautiful best friend moment where she's like, well, this would never work. I have to go back to LA. That's where my life is with Jack. That's where Tig Notaro is, which I get. It would be really hard to move away from Tig Notaro. But, you know, my whole life is there and I got this whole degree just to get this job and have him talk her off the ledge and him be like, no, I can't call so-and-so back. She broke up with me on my birthday because she's like, you know, the reason she did that is the same reason all the rest of them did it, because you're so closed off and you don't realize until now what you really want and you have to go and chase it. Yeah, that would just be so much better. So much better. And we don't have enough depictions of long-term male-female friendships in the heteronormative space that's not, you know, romantically linked. I had to look up. I'm like, what the fuck else is Jesse Williams in?
He's in Grey's Anatomy. Like, and I'm pretty sure that's where most people will know him from.
Yeah, I looked it up and I was like, I'm never watching that. There's like a gajillion episodes. It's been on for 14 years. I'm not going to even try. I'm not going to scratch the surface.
Well, not to spoil like 10 seasons ago Grey's Anatomy for anyone, but I will. he is in a relationship. So he plays Dr. Jackson Avery. And he's in a relationship with Dr. April Kepner. But and it's this whole thing. She's very religious and in a moment of stress, she sleeps with him, but she'd been saving herself. It's this whole thing. Anyway, she has like a crisis of faith afterward or whatever. They end up breaking up. She meets this guy that, again, on paper is perfect for her. He's also like same level religious, also saving himself, except like she's like, oh my God, if I had only met him like 6 months earlier, like maybe none of this would have happened and blah, blah, blah. But then she's going to get married to that guy. I can't remember his name. He was a paramedic. And then at their wedding, Jackson stands up, professes his love, and they run off together. And it is, oh my God. But then there's this whole thing. They end up losing a baby, you know, because Grey's Anatomy is a soap opera. So yeah. You know, everything dramatic that could happen will happen. I mean, they've survived shootings, arsonists, plane crashes, mergers, like anything under the sun has happened on that show.
I have to pause you just so you recognize the lineup that you just said. Shootings, arson, plane wrecks, mergers. You can continue. I just had to point that out. Like all of those things are on par.
Well, they're very dramatic in the context of the show. The hospital has changed names at least twice, I think. Like,
oh my God.
Yeah. So it's a very dramatic show, but he's also had other love interests. That's just like the big dramatic one that again, because they get married and then they get divorced. And then she ends up married to the paramedic guy. And then she leaves the show.
Jesus. That's...
Anyway.
I want to... Okay, this is what I want. In a
separate... Also, I am not caught up. I have no intention of catching up, I don't think. Maybe one day if I'm bored. But I don't even know the last season. There's been at least 3 seasons since the last time I watched. Maybe 4. I think they were just renewed for their 20th season. It's ridiculous. Jesus
Christ. No, see, I just want someone who's watched all of Grey's Anatomy to, like, sum it up for me within an hour. In a PowerPoint.
Could be a bonus episode.
Oh, don't threaten
and
me.
And I'll just sum all of Grey's. I'll make sure I watch the new episodes that I haven't watched.
Perfect. I'm sure that, honestly, people wish that we would do that with Buffy, too, since we reference it so often. But
I want to do, like, have you ever watched... I know I sent you a video just a couple days ago from Rowan Ellis, who's a YouTuber, and mm-hmm. who's also one of the hosts of the podcast I reference a lot of time, the Queer Movie Podcast. But she does a lot of these videos where she has basically... it looks like a conspiracy murder board behind her. And she is, like, in this very beautiful way, like, either recapping a show, or the video that I sent you was about the failure of queer representation in Ted Lasso in its mm-hmm. most recent and, I think, final season. And it's honestly an incredible video. All of her video essays are excellent. But, like, that's what we need. We need that board, and you just need me. Just give me a lot of alcohol, and then I will just recap the entire series of Buffy for you, or Grey's Anatomy,
both. How much
at the same time?
Oh my God! Imagine that would be so good. I love that so much. How much foliage do you want in your drinks?
I'm fine with fruit in my, you know, like an orchard can be in my drink, but like I don't want a cornfield.
That makes sense. I'm actually...
Or a vegetable garden.
I didn't prepare you for this. I'm shooting you a text as we are recording right now to show you my beautiful harvest of tiny spoon tomatoes, and I'll figure out a way to get those into your drink if you would so like. And I
they're
will
like
also
tomato boba. They're so small.
They are. They're as big as blueberries. Yeah, I love them so much. And I'll post a picture of them on our Instagram for anyone who wants to see it. Mostly because I'm a proud mother. But I'll work those into your beverage if you would like.
Great. Looking forward to it.
Wonderful.
Honestly, a Bloody Mary, I've never had a Bloody Mary, and honestly, it doesn't sound appetizing, but conceptually, a Bloody Mary boba with those in it.
Perfect.
I think that could be really popular. Let's open a bar.
Let's do it. Do you want to do like a half coffee, half like cocktail bar sort of vibe?
Yeah, we just like switch, but also yeah. Then we still offer your designated drivers the coffee.
Right. Like we, yeah. The wine bar, cocktail bar part of it opens at like 3.
Mm-hmm.
We have live music, stand-up comedy. We actually just play our episodes on repeat over the loudspeakers to increase our listenership. I love this. Mm-hmm.
I think it's a great idea. We can do live episodes at our own venue.
Oh my God. It's really funny that you say that because I went to a live storytelling performance last night for the podcast Old Gods of Appalachia, which I love our podcast, but I think theirs is even better.
I mean, I'm inclined to believe you, but also that's not even the same subject matter.
I know. It's great. I think we could do a version of that. We could whip out some nice horror podcast storytelling. I think it would be wonderful. We just need to find some voice actors. I don't think that anyone wants to hear my voice acting because, you know, my accents are just so great.
Honestly, well, would do you think it would be more money, like speaking financially, just mm-hmm. for a moment, do you think it would be more bang for our buck for us to hire a dialect coach to teach us to do the accents, or should we just hire voice actors?
Honestly, it'd probably be cheaper to get voice actors.
Fair enough.
Because I don't know if I can be trained. Although, if all of the accents are, like, Southern accents, I can do it. Just have me talk to an old person for, like, 5 minutes before each recording. I don't know what it is about anyone over the age of 65. I'm like, oh my goodness. Well, I really do hope that you have a wonderful day, you know, rest of your day, and be safe out there. You know, it's a crazy world. So, yeah, I think I could do it.
Great. Mm-hmm. Perfect.
Chelsea, I don't know what else to say about this movie that I haven't already said, which is probably anticlimactic for the people listening. But I think ultimately this movie can be likened to a ruined sneeze. Like, you know how good it is to just have the release of, like, a really good sneeze and then it doesn't happen? Like, something stops your sneeze and you're like, oh, damn, that's ruined my whole day. That's the sensation of this movie.
It's lackluster.
And I think I know a lot of people, like, that review said that they were just disappointed because it was a really good cast. And I guess this is a good, I wanted to ask you this. Since this is, you know, a star-studded cast with Reese Witherspoon, Ashton Kutcher, Jesse Williams, Tig Notaro, Rachel Bloom. We didn't even talk about Steve Zahn. He's an amazing character. I actually wrote in my notes, I am Steve Zahn.
Wait. Since we're talking about Steve Zahn, can I just say one thing?
Yes.
Okay. The portrait of wealthy people that he paints when Ashton Kutcher is asking him, like, why he's over there. And he's like, oh, well, I'm independently wealthy. Okay, how does that explain it? Then he's like, I surf in the AM and then I come over here and I take care of her garden. But he's the next door neighbor, so.
And it's a beautiful garden.
It is a beautiful, he is, for the record, doing a great job. Yeah. But Ashton Kutcher's like, okay, but what about your garden? He's like, oh no, I have a guy for that.
Yeah.
I did laugh really hard at that. It's just, well, also on a, I guess on a more positive note, it kind of illustrates that, you know, for people that want to say, like, people don't want to work anymore, like, no. When people don't have work to do, they create work for themselves. Like, they will find something to do. Like, if you allowed people to just do what they want to do, like, there are people that love being a barista. So if being a barista paid them enough to, you know, live, then they would probably just do that. And here's the thing. We need baristas because people want to buy coffee that they don't make for themselves. Right?
God. Yes. So, like, my favorite flavor of coffee.
In that respect, he is a perfect portrait of someone who is able to just do what he wants to do. And here he is hiring someone to take care of his garden. And he's just taking care of his neighbor's garden.
At no cost.
I do understand that he's apparently sleeping with her occasionally and he's, like, in love with her. But, like, he is also good at gardening, which I feel like is an important detail. He's not making weird creations or ruining her lawn.
Yeah, he's not standing around, like, suggestively holding a hose while overwatering a sparse lawn. Like,
Exactly.
Yeah. What would you do if you didn't have to survive this capitalist hellscape?
I honestly just want to reshelve books at a library.
That sounds like so much fun. Oh,
I know.
My God. You know what I would want to do? I would want to set up a community garden to help feed people healthy food in the community. Like, you know, fresh food at a free cost. So people with food insecurity can have access to good food.
We'd love to see it.
I know. I would just make everyone eat tiny tomatoes. And it would be amazing.
You'd be a tiny tomato tyrant.
Triple T, baby. It's
triple,
like,
threat.
It's... Oh, God. Oh. One is a threat, but not a promise with aggression.
The opposite
of a promise, which is a threat with love. Exactly. Oh my God. But Chelsea, do you think that this movie is perhaps just an underdeveloped plot or script that tried to rely too heavily on a star-studded cast to be successful? Or do you think that maybe it was just trying to do too many things at once? I mean, coming off the heels of our last bonus episode where Stardust did literally like 17 plots in one. Well, with at that time, not a super crazy well-known cast. I mean, you had Michelle Pfeiffer and Robert De Niro, but everyone else was still pretty early in their careers. Do you think that that was the downfall of this movie?
Perhaps. I can't rule it out. And honestly, I'm not even going to say that it's... I think the marketing probably relied heavily on the star-studded cast. Mm-hmm. I think they knew people were going to watch it. But I don't know. I kind of think that it tried to have them be friends, even though it knew that they wanted them to be lovers.
Yeah.
And the transition between those two things is just kind of non-existent.
It was weird because usually in friends to lovers story, it's either a gorgeous slow build, which is the best kind, or it's a really pivotal moment, and I just don't, and I guess this movie tried to do both with both perspectives. I just don't buy that him keeping the poker chip from the night they played poker and hooked up with, you know, where their friendship began and everything like that. And the whole time he's like, I don't keep knickknacks and I don't keep memorabilia of stuff. Which is just so Patrick Bateman. Like, get out of here. You don't keep things that bring you joy and contain memories. Sociopathic. I just don't see that being such an epiphany, such a big moment that it would steer the movie in the direction that it went. Which, I mean, I guess it's just reiterating everything that we've said before of it's not a believable friends to lovers story. Her realization doesn't feel profound. But I think it's interesting that they tried to hinge so much on that moment of her realizing that he had essentially like a keepsake of when they hooked up. And that was the moment that she realized her love for him. It just...
It's kind of like... It kind of feels like almost like a romance of convenience. Like, mm-hmm. I'm sure it would be super convenient to share your life with your friend. But I also would like to say that they could have done that and have it not be a romance.
Yeah.
And that's another kind of relationship or like family dynamic that we don't often see are these non-traditional families. And when I say non-traditional families, I'm not talking about queer folks that are also have basically nuclear families, right?
Like, I know, that's like the least,
I mean,
you know, yeah, anyway.
I mean, like people that have lifelong best friend, you know, they decide to cohabitate and, you know, raise her kid. That is, you know, unusual. It's not something that you see a lot, but I think that there's value in it because I guarantee you that there's more than one person that's living like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think we're just so dead set in a Western mindset of being so forced into the concept of individuality as, you know, the absolute peak of achievement and expression of self that concept would seem weird to us. But I think it's probably way more normal than we'd like to actually realize. But going off of that, what you said about a romance of convenience, it's almost like you could argue that she did not want to admit her feelings for him because she thought they were not reciprocated. And why admit something and why stir that up if it's not going to go anywhere? I could understand that point of view, which is basically the point of view that he's held the entire movie, that he's not going for it because he knows that she is in a different place in life than he is. I mean, it's very much something to consider at that point, you know, talking about maybe why he didn't do it earlier. It's a really big decision, life-altering decision for everybody involved to enter into a relationship with someone who has a child, because you're entering that child's life as well. So I can totally see why he didn't try to pursue anything sooner if he wasn't sure that was something that he would be comfortable with. But yeah, it was strange, like, well, I'm just not going to pursue it because I don't see it being reciprocated and I don't see it having any logical conclusion beyond possibly changing the dynamic of the friendship. But that also just wasn't, I don't know, it just wasn't well expressed on her end. It was on his. That's why I think Ashton Kutcher actually kind of carried the rom part of this rom-com, because his was just so much more established of his reason why he didn't pursue for so long. And we just kind of have to assume hers.
Yeah. I think that's ultimately why I'm just like, ugh, whatever. Like,
yeah. Yeah, it's an indifference, because it's like, well, it could have been something, but it wasn't. Why dwell? I've clearly dwelled too much. You know what? Let me check and see before we decide if this even was a rom-com to begin with. I want to make sure that I covered all of my notes. So just starting out, when they're like doing their hookup scene and he's talking about how he wants to be a writer and he has like 20 short stories written, I wrote, if a man offers to send you his short stories during a hookup, put your clothes back on. I think that's good advice. And then also, the metaphor of being surrounded by all of your baggage is the only point for airport proclamations of love. And then lastly, the side plot with Theo felt half-baked, and the realization felt half-baked, and it made me wish I was half-baked. And potentially eating cookies or brownies that were half-baked. So that's the theme of this movie. Cheers.
Isn't that a Ben and Jerry's flavor?
Yeah, it is a Ben and Jerry's flavor. It's a cookie dough and brownie batter in vanilla ice cream. I'm very well acquainted with Ben and Jerry's. So if you have any questions about it, just ask.
They do some good work, politically speaking.
They do.
They're a company that has values and they stand behind them.
You gotta love that in a small way. In a larger way, it's like, can corporations maybe not? But that's just another feeling for another day. And I'm going to let this amazing vibe of Ben and Jerry's just linger. Like the delicious taste of fish food ice cream, which is chocolate, caramel, marshmallow, which you might go, but it's pretty good. And chocolate shape and fish shaped chocolate. I almost said chocolate shaped fish, and that would be nasty.
Wouldn't that just be squares?
Yeah, a like, fish.
What is chocolate shaped?
A fish. Gross. No, it's fish shaped chocolate, which is delicious.
I don't like marshmallow. And look, I don't like marshmallow. Like, yes, I'm a vegetarian, so that's gelatin, which is not something that vegetarians usually eat. But my big problem is that I don't think marshmallows taste very good.
Yeah, I completely understand where you're coming from with that. Okay, Chelsea, was this a rom-com?
I don't know, Madison. If only we had some system in place to help us determine such a answer.
Insert magic sparkle sound here. Well, Chelsea, we do. Would you like to know the criteria?
Oh boy, would I.
Golly gosh. Well, the first question here. I'm so sorry.
Oh, golly gosh.
It fit the bit. The first question is, do they date? No.
No. And, okay, we're expanding that to be like, are there moments where we see them growing
closer together?
Like, closer together? And I think it's hard because they already have this established relationship.
Mm-hmm.
So while, yes, they are close friends, I think a lot of them learning about each other is done very separately and feels very removed. Mm-hmm. And dating in itself feels very intentional. Like, you're intentionally trying to get to know a person. And all mm-hmm. of this feels very, like, coincidental, happenstance.
When thinking about that question, I thought about, if you want to expand it into them growing together, learning more about each other, getting more emotionally invested. Initially, I was like, you could argue that maybe, yes, in that he comes to really understand what her life is like. Because one sticking point of the movie that they try to impress upon you in like the first third of the movie is that these are best friends who talk every day, and yet there are still things about their lives that each other don't know about. Like, they don't mutually know seemingly big things. He doesn't know about Steve Zahn, you know, being her lawn caretaker and occasional lover. And she doesn't know that he wrote a whole fucking book. They feel like these are really big things to leave out. But one, that's a book that he wrote that he never had any intention of it going anywhere, probably because he didn't have the confidence to think that it could go anywhere, to put it out into the world, to see where it could land. Why would she tell him about randomly hooking up with the independently wealthy gardener? Like, why would that just come up? They're allowed to have privacy in their lives, even being close like that. And so you could argue that they kind of grow closer and learn more about one another with him experiencing her life, her reading his book. But these, like you said, it exists in such separate instances that it's more so them realizing that they're maybe not as close as they thought they were, rather than an intentional growth of that intimacy and relationship.
Yeah.
So no, they don't date.
Dun, dun, dun.
We're already down one. All right, second, did we laugh? Were we meant to laugh? Is there an intentional nod towards humor?
And also importantly, as we learned in our bonus episode, to expand that question, is comedy playing a prominent role in the telling of the tale, I feel like, is mm-hmm. is an important question.
It's not a few throwaway jokes. It's kind of baked into the style of the movie.
Mm-hmm. I think we did laugh. I mean, and I laughed not just at random cameos. I think Tig Notaro, iconic. Mm-hmm. Every scene has a coffee cup.
Yes.
Is just drinking coffee. I have never wanted to be someone so much. I'm like, this is me. If I could walk around with coffee in my hand 24/7, I would. I think that's Gilmore Girls, like, put it in an IV. Just like, mm-hmm. yeah.
And it's that's a big ass coffee cup too. Like, it's not
so big.
Yeah, it's huge.
It's a huge coffee cup.
I mean, there's the funny bit with Rachel Bloom at the beginning, which kind of kickstarts the initial conflict. I think Minka's character is funny in a silly way. Yeah.
She's great. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I feel like a lot of the humor was brought in more by the supporting cast.
Oh, absolutely. In that regard, it made me think of Failure to Launch, where I, like, hated the movie, but I loved Zooey Deschanel's character.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So, like, this movie, I don't think I had such strong feelings. It was just kind of lackluster, and I was like, ultimately, I'm going to forget what this movie's even about.
I've already forgotten the
but
name.
But, yeah, I do think the comedy is carried by the supporting cast in this film. And in terms of the prominence of said comedy and its role within the telling of this story, I think it makes sense. I think that it is supporting the lessons that they're learning, like, about mm-hmm. themselves. it's kind of the comedy in making mistakes or realizing that you've had such a weird perspective on a particular issue. I think that's all in there. And also just the comedy of like being in a quote unquote foreign land and like not like trying to get your bearings, being a fish out of water in the case of Reese Witherspoon when, you know, Minka takes her to the lounge and she, it's like, have you ever been with someone where it's like, I simultaneously envy these people, but like you almost feel secondhand embarrassment for them because you understand the entire context of a situation. So you understand that they're acting in a way that's not, I'm not going to say not appropriate, but like certainly not the norm for the particular situation.
Right.
And yet they just have the confidence to like do what is natural to them. So like I simultaneously have so much respect for those people. And at the same time, I'm like cringing because I could never.
Yeah, it's the people who just, it's me. Once I get two beers and a gin and tonic in my system at a live podcast, like theatrical performance, where I just start bullying everyone around me. Is it appropriate? No. Is it confident and funny? Absolutely.
Yeah.
My friend Lily's really good at that. And it's not even a matter of like cringing when she does it. It's more so just awe of like, man, you just go through the world being so explicitly you. And it just works out. It just works. I'm in constant awe of people like that. Because it's like, I'm just over here dying at the thought of me trying to do that. Unless, of course, I am inebriated. But I don't know Drunk Madison. I've never met her. I hear she's a great gal. I hear she's also really aggressive when it comes to playing Go Fish.
She is.
Just as long as ground rules are set of what curse words she can use. So we did laugh. I think probably more at Ashton Kutcher's character too, with him trying to figure out how to mind a 13-year-old boy when he can't even keep a plant alive because he's very anti-plant in his place, and I can only assume it's because he would kill it and it would be useless. Also, why did they keep calling the herbs herb plants? That's
okay. Thank you.
Yes.
I...
It's like, do you have any herb plants?
Herbs.
Don't make it complicated.
I mean, I guess the only thing is like trying to be specific so you know that you're not just asking, do you have herbs in like your cupboard? But it was very weird every time they said it.
Finally, Chelsea, and I think this is a very obvious answer, is romantic love in the driver's seat here? Is romance propelling this plot?
Yeah, so here's the thing. It's not... It's not. It feels like the driver like jumped out and romance was in the back seat and just was like, here's my shot.
I was about to say, it's sort of like a seance where you go like, is romance in the room with us now? It's not. No. Romance is the self-driving Tesla feature in this movie, in that it doesn't function well and may end up hitting a child. Because a child did get hit in this movie. Broke his arm. Or maybe gave him a concussion. Was it just a concussion?
I think it was a concussion.
Ah, damn.
I don't think he broke his arm.
I watched this movie twice and I still don't know what happened to that fucking kid. I just know he got to play his dream sport.
Admittedly, he picked one of the better ones, so.
He really did. It was either going to be that, roller derby, or women's soccer. So,
yeah,
he had three options.
This is the only option. This is the only acceptable sports.
Right. And anyone else who wants to write in and say that football or rugby or God forbid you say baseball, you're wrong. Save your keystrokes.
The only baseball that's right is the baseball played by
lesbians. Oh, I didn't mean to. You were going to say something much more profound than that.
Oh, no, I was going to say specifically the All-American League during 1943.
Yeah.
AKA when the lesbians were playing baseball.
Correct. What a time to be alive. So this movie is not a rom-com. It is marketed as one, but do not be fooled. It's sort of like vegan cheese, where you know it's just not going to do what you want because it's not going to fucking melt. This movie is the vegan cheese of rom-coms.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Scathing.
I know. I only feel bad for vegans on two fronts. Cheese and honey. The rest of it I understand.
Yeah.
Freaking love honey. That's my job. If I didn't have to survive capitalism, I want to be a beekeeper.
Great.
Yeah. Wow. This was the first episode. We got it in the books. What else do I do now? Guess I'll just have to prepare for next week.
Or maybe you might be forgetting we should rate the movie.
Oh, I did forget about that. Fine. I guess I'll rate the movie. Chelsea, how do I even rate this movie?
Well, Madison, golly gosh, glad you asked. We like to rate our movies on a scale of 1 to 5. We call it a watchability score.
Where did we come up with that?
Oh, based on Realtor's use of walkability score, which ranks properties based on how walkable they are from various popular locations, such as shopping centers, movie theaters, restaurants, libraries, parks, yada, yada, yada. Okay.
That makes sense.
So coming at number one, the bottom, is Stranded in the Desert. Number two, Backroads Barbecue. 3, strip mall in suburbia. 4, 4 blocks from a transit stop. And 5, the best coffee in town right downstairs. So Madison, what would you rate this disappointing movie?
Chelsea, I don't want to give it a 1 because that feels too strong. I didn't hate it that much. I was just disappointed in it. It's like I'm not mad, I'm disappointed. So, but I also don't want to give it a 2 because that seems too kind. So I'm going to give it a 1.75, which to create my own subcategory is like through hiking. You're through hiking on the Appalachian Trail.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Brutal.
Georgia to Maine, baby. Let's go.
I'm going to give this a 2.
Oh, wow.
I think it's fine. And I think I was entertained enough by Tig Notaro, Steve Zahn, and most of the cast of Crazy Ex-Girlfriend.
Yeah, that's very fair. So what are you cooking at your Backroads Barbecue?
Probably beer-battered vegetables to continue the unnecessary alcohol vegetable theme.
Love that. You should grill some corn.
Yeah, we could grill some corn.
Delicious.
Ooh, 4th of July.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just kidding. Actually, sorry. For your birthday, my friends and I air fried corn.
Uh-huh.
It was so fucking good.
That sounds incredible. Send me the deets.
I'll have to ask.
I'll post them on Instagram. That way all of the laughsters can air fry corn. I feel like they would enjoy that.
I didn't make the corn. My one friend did. So I'll have to ask him what he ended up putting on it. But we air fried it and then we did a rub and we air fried it. And then at the end we finished it off with like this garlic butter.
Ugh.
It was like honestly one of the most delicious corn on the cobs I've ever had.
That sounds remarkable and possibly one of the best ways to spend my birthday, July 4th, which is my birthday.
All the food we ate for your birthday was delicious.
Did you have any cookie cake?
We did not have cookie cake. We had peach pie with horchata ice cream.
Damn.
It was really good.
That sounds beautiful.
Yeah.
Well, Chelsea, we had thoughts and opinions on this movie, but I feel like we're going to have even more thoughts and opinions on next week's movie. I have already watched it, and I am so excited.
What are we even watching?
gosh, I am so, golly gosh, Chelsea, I'm so glad you asked. That needs to die. It won't come back in any future episodes.
Or will it?
Oh, bum, bum, bum. All right, next week we're watching Palm Springs, which came out in 2020. And it features Andy Samberg as the love interest. That's all I'm going to say. Actually, I'll say one more thing. It has J.K. Simmons in it. So that's all anyone needs to know about this movie going into it. I think that guarantees that it's going to be amazing. I hope you're looking forward to it because it is probably top three weirdest movies we will have watched on this podcast.
Really?
I think so. I think in terms of how out there it is, if you exclude any bonuses, like exclude any bonus episodes, it's probably up there as one of the weirdest.
Well, Madison, what do people have to look forward to this season besides an awesome new theme song to jam out to?
We have so much stacked into this season. We have some great guests. We're actually going to have like a guy come on. We finally got all of the certifications to allow male, you know, like really masculine energy to enter this podcast space. Since it is technically a biohazard, we did have to get a lot of certifications to deal with that. But we're going to have some great guests on. We're going to cover some movies that people have really been begging us to do, like How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days. We're going to have some amazing cynics choices lined up. So I really feel like this might be our season. We're also, our bonus episodes this season are going to pop off. It's gonna
hit. We will give you a little bit of a sneak peek right now because we actually do need something from the Laughsters for one of our bonus episodes. So, Laughsters, if you have ever had the misfortune of going on a horrible date, or if you know someone who's gone on a horrible date, we would love to hear your stories. So you can write in to our email, loveitfirstscreening@gmail.com. You can send us a DM on Instagram @loveitfirstscreening and tell us about this ridiculous date. It could be like a horror story that is truly harrowing and maybe put you off dating for good. It could also just be something absolutely ridiculous that looking back on it, you're like, oh my God. Madison will, I'm sure, be sharing countless stories that she hasn't even shared already. I mean, you've shared a couple.
If there's a bad date story, I've lived it. So I'm just really hoping that someone else can have a worse story than me. I want to know that my stories are not the peak. We're not even going to talk about the Olive Garden gift card situation, okay? So at least not right now. So please write in. You can also send us like a voice memo via email if you want to be audibly included. Just hit us up and tell us about your absolute worst date because there is nothing we love more than commiseration.
So send us those dating horror stories, or even just comical dating stories. And we will be reminding you throughout the season to go ahead and submit those, but we're really looking forward to reading them. We think it'll be a lot of fun.
I can't wait. And we'll, like Chelsea said, we'll continue to remind you and we'll remind you at the top of the future episodes to write in before we do our little intro spiel. So, Chelsea, I've had a great time. It's so good to see your face again. I was so lonely. You're like a beacon of light in the darkness of my life.
Aww.
Am I like a beacon of light in the darkness of your life? Anyway, do you want to do the outro?
All right. Well, thank you for tuning in. We're here every Wednesday talking about all of the rom-coms you love to hate, and everything in between. So until next time, golly gosh.